Welcome to Sports and a Slice of Life. And now, here's your host, Dave Lewis.
Okay, getting a chance to get the view from the other side of the world. Good friend Michael Brown from London with us. How are you today?
Good, David. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, hey, what's your perspective on what's going on with the United States and this COVID-19 pandemic?
You know, that's an interesting question because my perspective comes from there's two roads of my perspective. And that is one coming from the U.S., you know, being born, raised, lived in the U.S. for years and years and years, then coming over here and seeing it from somebody looking outside in, and also getting the perspective of the people that I talk to. So in that respect, I kind of have almost two viewpoints. From the viewpoint of being an American and seeing the way Americans have behaved, not behaved, that's a bad word, but the reacted, I should say, with regard to the COVID-19, it is different from the Europeans. And now I kind of have to say the British, given the given Brexit and all, but it's here on the continent and in Britain, we actually came together. It feels like we came together. We understood there was something that we were all faced with. And we did what the government recommended. And they got input, obviously, from the same, from NHS and everybody else, National Health Service, with regard to guidance and how we should proceed and how we should do the social distancing, lockdown, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? It seemed like everybody was basically working to the beat of the same drummer. In the United States, when I look at it, you know, there's 50 states. And then you had, so 50 states are making their own decisions, looking for guidance from the top, being obviously, you know, Donald Trump, not necessarily getting the guidance they were looking for, hoping for. So then left to their own devices to make their own decisions. So then all of a sudden you have 50 different states making decisions on how they should proceed. And so that is coming from me, but it actually is also coming from the people that, you know, my friends, colleagues, et cetera, that it seems a bit splintered. Their approach has been splintered where the continent and the UK, pretty much a unified approach to how we dealt with the COVID-19 crisis.
Well, how did you guys withstand being cooped up? Did you have a stay-at-home order for a while where you couldn't leave?
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt.
And how long did it last?
It lasted the exact number was 102 or 103 days, okay?
3 months, okay.
Yeah, so it was very interesting. So I live in West London, and I live in a flat, and across the streets is another, you know, another building of flats. And it was interesting. Every Thursday night, we would clap for the NHS because Thursday night, 8 o'clock, clap for the NHS because of what they were doing, what they were going through. And it was so, it brought us closer to our neighbors across the street. London is very, it's very different from the United States. United States, everybody, hey, how you doing? What's up? You know, that kind of thing, right? Here in London, it's, you know, heads down, even in our own apartment building, a flat building, you know, I hope I don't run into any neighbors so I don't have to say hello to them. It's just different. It's different from the United States. But this right here, every Thursday night, we're waving to the people across the street and everything. And it just, it brought us together. So it helped in that 102, 103 days. And it was actually easier to do than you would think. You know, I know my wife and I, Kelly, we started doing different things. We never grew anything. We grew a tomato plant. And so we're looking after that. We're reading, you know, some of the great classics to each other that we wouldn't read on our own, but it was something different to do. We listened to a lot of music. And you know what? A lot of people watch more TV. We actually watch less TV. And I don't know why that was, but I don't know. These are the things that got us through. And, you know, there was a local park that, you know, every day, well, not every day, but, you know, 4 days out of the week, I'd go to a workout. Actually, Kelly was really good. Almost 6 days a week, she'd go do her own workout. So that's kind of how we got through it. Because we just got, I don't know if you know this, but I call it the British Independence Day because the 4th of July, it was lifted. So I think it's funny that it coincided, you know, with the, you know, U.S. Exactly. Independence Day.
So you view the Americans being as pretty much disjointed with our approach to it.
Sadly, yes. Yes, I do. I do. And to be honest, there just hasn't been a lot of guidance from the top. The American spirit is, it lives in me. I mean, it does. I love the American spirit. You know, we're going to get through anything. We can do it. We've proven for hundreds of years we can get through anything. And I love that spirit. I think this is slightly different. So it saddens me when, you know, I know over the course of the last few days, it's gone up, I think, 2 or 3 days in a row, over 50,000 cases a day. And then I think it's dropped a bit to 40,000 cases a day. But this is different. I mean, this is really different. And I think we need to come together. And I say we, you know, I am American through and through, even though I live here, right? We need to come together to actually fight this thing. We absolutely do. So,
was there a point, Michael, with the masses where you live in the UK that, you know, hey, we can't take it anymore and we've got to reopen because, you know, here in the States, it's like, hey, let's get those businesses going again. And there's a mixture of balancing the numbers and science and the economic pressure to make it happen.
To be honest, no. I have to tell you, no. And you didn't. You know, obviously, we were following Italy and Spain very, very closely because they were the first ones in the continent that actually were experiencing COVID-19 to the degree that the rest of the world eventually was experiencing it, right? We're experiencing it. No, to be honest, there was very little of that. Very, very little of that. Even right now, with everything opening up, hasn't opened up is gyms, our gyms. And, you know, there's been a bit of pushback on that, but everybody understands it's for the good of the country. It's for the good of the people. It's going to save lives. Everywhere you see, everywhere where the public would actually commute or shop or something like that, you would see placards, you would see different things about doing this to save lives, doing this to help the NHS. It felt like we really came together as a country.
So what's open right now, and are folks wearing masks in public all the time then?
So pretty much everything is open. Pubs were the big thing, right? The pub culture in the UK, if Americans don't know this, the pub culture in the UK is amazing. It's brilliant. It's a very important part of the British culture, actually. And that was the most recent thing to actually open up. Pubs, restaurants, all that opened up. Barbershops, hairdressers, etc. All that opened up on the 14th. Now, there are restrictions in place and there's trace and tracking. Trace and tracking means that, like, if you're going to a restaurant, actually, Kelly and I just went out to dinner the other day and I had to tell them who all was in my party. I made the reservation. I had to tell them all who was in my party. So in case something happened, in case people at the restaurant would happen to come down with the coronavirus, then they would contact everybody who was in the restaurant at the time, right? Gyms are not open. Now, not all pubs are open, not all restaurants are open, but for the most part, a lot of them have opened. And is it life back to normal? No, not by any stretch of the imagination. Not, like I keep saying, gyms are not open. obviously, gym is important to me. I keep mentioning it. But gyms are not open. And like I said, not all pubs, not all restaurants are open. And the other question, are people wearing masks? Yes. I will say that I'm probably not one to wear a mask. We have to on public transport. So if we go on a bus, and buses are very, very important in London, everyone takes buses. And the tube, obviously, is very important. And you have to wear masks on public transport.
That's interesting with the pubs, because that would be the one I think would be the last to open, because in the United States, especially places like Texas, that's the regret that the governor had was, hey, I regret opening bars because they're basically super spreader environments.
But I'm, and to be honest, I don't know for sure what if they had any restrictions put in place, but I will say there are restrictions put in place, and everything that I've seen thus far, they're being adhered to. They really, really are being adhered to. It's amazing, actually. So I belong to a golf club. I'm fortunate enough to belong to a golf club. And for the first time at the weekend, I had was able to sit outside and, you know, have a pint afterwards. And every time somebody left a table, they came around and they sprayed the table and the chairs with disinfectant. And that is the kind of adherence to the guidance that the government is giving, that the NHS is giving, that I think is a big reason why our numbers of COVID-19 cases continue to go down.
Do you see any of the videos and images from what happens here in the States, like these pool parties in Michigan, Wisconsin, and
absolutely,
you know, beaches, wherever the place?
Absolutely.
What do you think?
I mean, you know that I lived in New Hampshire for a long time, and you know the state motto in New Hampshire is "Live free or die," and every time I see those things, I'm thinking, okay, well, you know what? I mean, live free or die. We know that it's a low percentage of people that die, right? But it just feels not right. These are unusual circumstances, and I will say an interesting thing. You know, I don't know if it's interesting to the people that are going to listen to this podcast, but not too long ago, there was somebody here in the UK, I can't remember, but he was somebody well-known, and he said, you know what? He goes, we had to, in World War II, we had to protect ourselves every way we can. We stayed indoors. We did everything we could to protect ourselves because we were under attack. This is not that. All we're asking you to do is to stay indoors and watch the television, right? I mean, and so when I think, sometimes it saddens me when I'll go back to, I love the American spirit. I absolutely love it. But this is different. This is different. And the American spirit is about survival and is about overcoming obstacles. This is an obstacle. And if America wants to overcome this, then they have to come together.
Would you say the only way that happens if we're all on board with the leadership at the top as well? And I haven't gotten really political ever on this podcast.
No,
yeah. We've got a president that won't wear a mask and basically thumbs his nose at it. And it's become an issue of, if you support the president, you don't wear a mask. If you're on the other side, you do wear a mask.
You know, I'm a lay person, right? I'm a lay person. But my personal opinion, and not just the opinion from, you know, friends that I have here, my mates and that sort of thing, you know, the current leadership is not bringing the people together. You see leaders of the past. I mean, you know, you and I, you know, we go back quite a ways, and we've experienced a lot. We've experienced a lot of leaders, and there's always been two sides. There's been the left and the right, and it doesn't matter. The left or the right is always recognized that, you know, I don't really like what the left is saying, or I don't really like what the right is saying, but for the good of the people, I have to say, you know, we've got to do this. We've got to work together. And I've never seen, and I will say this up front right now, I'm a Republican. But I am for the American people before I am any political party. And, you know, we need a leader that is going to say, you know what, we have our differences of opinions, but we need to come together. And we need to come together for the good of the country, for the good of society, and for the lives of the individuals. And so, you know, I'm not going to lambast Trump at all. I just am going to say that, you know, we need a leader that is capable of saying, listen, we have our differences of opinion. We are experiencing something that nobody has experienced in our lifetime. Not one person in the federal government, in the state government, in the local government, and nobody, with the exception of, you know, those that are centenarians, that has ever experienced. So we do need some guidance that says, listen, let's just do the right thing. And we need, this is my opinion, if we had somebody at the top says, listen, you know what, I know you need to get your roots done, I know you need to get a haircut, but listen, is it really worth it? Is it worth sacrificing your life? Is it worth sacrificing the life of your spouse, of your kids, of your parents?
Well, you mentioned the sacrifice of the hair. I thought about this yesterday. The shortstop for the Astros, Carlos Correa, is asking his wife for the rest of the season, whenever they do play, to not go into a hair salon, to make that sacrifice.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought, wow, that just, you talk about really sucking it up and taking one for the team. Next, she's going to be on Survivor.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah,
I know.
Don't make that
a news story. That's pathetic.
But that's the thing that, and that was, to be honest, that was the first thing. And I also want to say one thing, that a lot of what we see, what I'm seeing, you know, is coming from the media. And we know that the media can take things out of context, and we know that the media can slant things, right? So, yeah, I'm just going by with what I'm seeing. But the first time that I ever thought, wow, I think America is kind of lost the plot here, was when I saw somebody in Detroit or Michigan. I don't know if it was Detroit, but it was Michigan. And they were having all the protests. Remember, early on, they were having all the protests. And somebody was showing the roots of her hair. And I'm like, are you kidding me? The roots of your hair. And she basically says something to the effect, I can't even get my hair done. And she showed her, it saddened me quite a bit, actually. And I don't mean, America is the strongest country on the planet. It is one of the most amazing republics of all time. It has gone through a lot, but it's done through by coming together. It has gone through more than any other country than I can remember, as far as wars and helping other countries, and but it has done it by coming together.
Yeah, certainly a long way to go. I want to get off this subject and just get your thoughts on a couple things.
Okay.
In terms of sports, have some fun. Now, you're a big time golfer.
Yes.
And by the way, you were swapping some messages yesterday. Kelly got a hole in one.
Yeah, my wife just got a hole in one yesterday. Her second ever, actually, on the same hole, actually. So she got a hole in one.
How far was that?
She must have been about 145 yards, I think. So it was okay. A par three, obviously a par three, 145 yards. But you know, at even 70 yards, be very, very difficult to even a chip in. It's very difficult to to chip one in. So yeah, it was really good. What was really funny about it was I was probably about 150, And so I hit a great shot, and I was within 2 feet. Within 2 feet, I'm thinking.
On the same hole.
On the same hole, yeah, yeah. So her shot was that we were playing in a four ball, and somebody, the other lady went, and then Kelly went, and I'm just thinking, oh, nobody can get inside that. And then we're all standing there. I'm like, oh, looks like Kelly's going to get close. And they're like, oh, wow, you might get in. And then all of a sudden we saw her go in. So, yeah, it was quite fun.
What kind of club does she use from that distance?
I believe she used an 8-iron, an 8 or a 7. Yeah, it was okay. An 8 or a 7. She's pretty athletic. So yeah, an 8 or a 7. Yeah, yeah.
Because the last time I got a hole, I don't want to tell you, but it involved a windmill and a clown's mouth.
Yeah. And was that an 8-iron?
Probably. I needed some touch there. So yeah, yeah. You're familiar with Bryson DeChambeau.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
Had a win at the Rocket Mortgage, and you've seen what he's done with his body?
Yeah, yeah. No, I know. It's amazing. And I don't know if there's a question behind this. I don't know if I'm jumping ahead.
Well, because I want to get into the food. You know, like, you know, golfers were trying to be fit and athletic. You know, Tiger Woods kind of set that bar in motion.
He really did.
It's not just the, you know, the big guy with the beer belly hitting it.
Yeah.
And so now he's kind of setting the tour on its collective ear by saying, hey, during this lockdown, I'm going to gain a bunch of weight. So I want to play for you, Mike. This is Bryson DeChambeau and his diet. Okay, check it out.
Okay.
In the mornings, I usually have four eggs, 5 pieces of bacon, some toast, and 2 protein shakes, 2 Orgain protein shakes. And then throughout the course of the day, I'll have, you know, a Go Macro bar here and there. I'll have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I'll have another protein drink. I'll have at least 2 protein drinks on the golf course. So every, you know, 6 holes. So you go, you know, 6, 12, and then after the round, I'll have one. After that, I'm snacking when I'm practicing. After, go back to the hotel, eat a dinner, steak, potatoes. Then, and I'll have 2 protein shakes with it there as well. So, you know, I'm consuming around, I'd say 6 to 7 of those Orgain protein shakes a day now, where I used to be, you know, 2 or 3. So as I've upped the weight, upped everything, I just had to consume a lot more. Luckily, I like the taste of those shakes, so I can take those pretty easily.
What would be your caloric intake?
Shoot, I have no idea. Probably, if you were to add all that up, it'd be around 3,000 to 3,500, I think.
Way more
like
than that.
That.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's got to be way more than that.
That's crazy.
It's got to be way more than that. Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of inspiring, right? You could play the sport you love and just eat like a horse.
But that is brilliant. It's, you know, I don't know if you recall, but a few years ago I did the boxing match his diet actually was fairly similar, not nearly as intense, but the number of eggs and the protein shakes was way up, actually way up. The it's interesting because the old school thinking was that, you know, the more muscle you had, the worse you played because you couldn't stretch. But as you know, I mean, you're quite athletic, David, and the if as long as you're training and stretching and working those muscles and working them in a way that they're functional muscles, not just muscles for show. You know, I think, you know, like you said, Tiger Woods first proved that, you know, being incredibly athletic, fit, strong, did it. Brooks Koepka, you know, DeChambeau, exactly. You know, I don't think DeChambeau would ever admit, but I think he was inspired by Brooks Koepka. Kept being able to hit the ball so far. So he's I want a piece of that action.
Yeah, what about consistently hitting it 350 off the tee?
Oh, man. Although, you know what? I play with a guy here. He's aspiring to be a touring pro. He's part of our club. And that guy can hit it 330 in the air. And he's very, very lean. He's tall. So he's got that fulcrum, right? He's got that fulcrum that really generates the power. And, but it does, so his is to me more natural, but it does go, I think Koepka proves that, you know, you can make it happen. He's done it through science and, you know, now through the science of physiology, because he's trying to build up his body. Because, you know, DeChambeau has, his clubs are all the same length, right? You know that. So His success up to this point has been through science, now through, you know, the science of physiology.
I'm trying to get you updated on everything in sports now. Are you familiar with the Nathan Seamus hot dog eating competition?
I heard a bit about it. I can't remember how many actually hot dogs he actually ate. And right. Is he achieving this through physiology and the science of physiology as well?
I think he's doing it naturally. 75 hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes.
Oh, man. I have to... To be honest, I wish I could do that because I love hot dogs, but that's something actually. The buns alone. I don't even think I could 75 grams of buns in 10 minutes.
I know. I go In-N-Out Burger. I take out the bread, right? Protein style. So I can have two double doubles.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So here's Joey and his key to victory, how he did it.
I was, the hot dogs were really fast. I think they were just cooked them like 10 minutes ago. So, that helps. They're cooking less hot dogs for, usually they're cooking like 1,000 hot dogs for all the eaters. Now it's a quarter of that. And so it's that helped a lot. And being inside helped. I did train a little bit more this year, so.
Well, congratulations, Joey.
I hope I didn't burp there
at the end.
That really makes me laugh because you know how they have the 100-meter, 100-yard dash records, indoor, outdoor. So what the wind affects how much he can actually ingest.
Right, it was indoors. We had a indoor, competitive
exactly.
edge.
So he could adjust more.
Asterisk that record.
Exactly. So he could adjust more because he's indoors because the wind wasn't affecting him. Oh, that really makes me laugh.
What do you like still in the States, whether it's sports that you keep in touch, whether news or movies, and then what have you really found yourself embracing since you moved overseas?
That's a great question, Dave. And when I first moved over here, I really, really, really tried to keep that umbilical cord. I really, really did. You know, I subscribed to MLB, ESPN, so I could watch the games via ESPN on the internet. Same thing with the NFL, so I could, you know, I was a huge San Diego Chargers fan, and of course Patriots, because I spent so much time. So I really try to watch those games and not hear the score and that sort of thing. But then it was like, there was the cost, and it was like, okay, I have to carve out time the next day to do it. And then I'm always someone that's like, well, it's not really live, so I'm always, somebody who loves sports so much felt like my feeling and the way I was reacting to each and every play would affect the outcome. How silly is that? So then I kind of did that, and then that kind of fell by the wayside a bit. But I kept in touch, right? And then of course I embraced the football or soccer here, the premiership. Everybody asked me, have you chosen a team yet? I was like, well, no, not yet. I just got here, a few months ago. I haven't chosen a team. So then I went through a very systematic process of choosing a premiership football team to follow.
What do you mean systematic?
So they're saying, who's your team? So I was looking at the different teams and I said, all right. I want a team that is pretty much London-based because, the premiership is all throughout England, right? So I want a team that's around London. I want a team that can actually score. I want a team that isn't the default two teams, because when I moved here, there were two default teams that so many Americans chose, Chelsea and Man United. And I just said, I'm not going to pick those teams. I'm just not going to do it. Out of principle alone, I'm not going to do it. Plus, I want a team that has a lot of English players. And because because especially around that time, a lot of foreign players were starting to come into the premiership. I don't have anything against them. I just wanted, given that I wanted to embrace Britain, I wanted a lot of English players. So I eventually, and I wanted a team that was competitive, but wasn't necessarily going to be a guaranteed. And that took me to Tottenham. And so I chose the Tottenham Hotspurs. And it really was a systematic process that I picked them and I followed them. So I embraced them a lot. In the first few years especially, I really, really followed them. And I'll get to why I don't follow them as much anymore. But I tell you, I have fallen in love with international rugby. International rugby I love because I love the patriotism of the sport. And they have a lot of international rugby competitions. They have Six Nations here, which is brilliant. And Six Nations is France, England, Wales, Scotland, Ireland, and Italy. And so I watch that. I watch, of course, watch the World Cup of rugby. And those guys don't make a lot of money, and they work hard. These guys work on both sides of the field, offense, defense, very few, very little pads, no helmets, and they're tough. They're tough. So I've fallen in love with that. And then the pub culture, the pub culture of it, of golf. Well, I didn't really, you know me. I mean, I golfed a tiny bit in the U.S., but not much. But when I came over here, I embraced it. I'm trying to think what else I embraced. I guess city living in London, it's quite different. It's hugely different, actually. Taking buses everywhere, public transport, not necessarily relying on a car, hardly ever, actually.
Do you have a car?
Yeah, I do. I do, but it doesn't get driven that often. In fact, you know, this is going to come as a shock to most Americans, but the car that we turn it in every 3-4 years, it'll have 7-8,000 miles on it. Yeah.
What do you turn it in for then?
For a new one, actually. Actually, this time we're actually thinking, why should we turn it in? Actually, this time we might have about 10,000 on it because we've driven a bit more this time. But yeah, it's just, well, yeah.
10,000 miles in 3 or 4 years?
Yeah. I know. It's a shocker, isn't it? It's
That's
a shocker.
Crazy.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think what else. It's just, and don't get me wrong, there's all kinds of things about the UK and British culture that I can't stand. But those are the things you asked me about, the things that I like. Those are the things that I've embraced. And yeah, in general, to be close to the continent, so many different cultures, you know, literally Spain, Italy, Germany, the Middle East, Greece, you know, to be so, you know, the Nordics, to have all of these things 2 hours or less away. To me, traveling and meeting different people is the best education you can have. I put it above and beyond any type of Ivy League education that you can get, because if you don't know how people live, if you don't meet them firsthand, you don't truly know how they think. You don't truly know how they feel. And to me, that is one of the things that I cherish most about the move that I have made, is being able to experience all of that. I would never have gone to Africa, mainly South Africa. I've been to North Africa, but only Morocco, you know, Tangiers. But South Africa, I've been to Namibia, I've been to South Africa, of course, I've been to Zimbabwe. You can only learn so much through textbooks. That's all I can
Where's your favorite place?
Let's see. I have to say, that's a tough one. St. Petersburg is an amazing place. Salzburg in Austria, absolutely stunning. Absolutely stunning. Cape Town's beautiful. Berlin is another place that would shock you, actually. It's probably one of my favorite cities in all of the world right now. And the reason being is because of the history behind it. And they've done a fantastic job of maintaining the history. And to be honest, and this is sometimes where I get a bit scared about America, you can't erase history. You can't erase it. You can't change the negative. You can't erase the bad things that happened in history. And they have not. Their approach in Germany and Berlin is, we learn from this. We're never going to erase it.
Because there's the argument that folks, that we're kind of circling back, that some of these statues, the Confederate statues being removed, it's not that we don't want to forget the history. Study about it in the history books. We just don't need to honor it with a statue, with statues that were built after the Civil War, after those guys lost, after those people rebelled against the United States and sticking up for slavery.
Yeah, I think the United States is at an inflection point right now. Without getting too deep into it, and I'm just a layperson. I don't know really.
You're not voting for Kanye West?
I saw an interesting tweet today. It was breaking news. Kanye West announces he needs more attention. getting back to you just. If you forget your past, you will never, never, ever, no, not just forget, if you erase it. Because if you erase it, no one will learn from it. Right? If you erase your past, no one will learn from it. The United States did a lot of good things and they did a lot of bad things. A lot of things today have been taken out of context from what the context was 200, 300, 400 years ago. Can you excuse any of the bad things that they did? No. Can you forget any of the good things that were done? No. In fact, what is the one country that most everybody wants to go to today? We already know that's rhetorical. The United States. The next is probably Britain. The next after that is probably Germany, right? I mean, so all these countries did something, right? For all these other people in all these other countries that we want to go to. So we can't forget the good things that we did. And if we don't forget the good things we did, maybe that will help keep us together.
I wish I could go overseas and visit, but Americans aren't allowed to travel.
No, not right now. Sure. If you stayed in lockdown another 2 months, you might have been able to.
Yeah. I mean, if I book the trip now and get a good airfare for the fall, perhaps.
Yeah. Anytime. You're welcome anytime, Dave. You know this.
You're the best, man. What a great chat. And we'll do this again, get the perspective overseas from Michael Brown. I really appreciate it, man. You're the best.
Oh, thank you. I'm honored. Thank you. Cheers, mate. Take care.
Thanks to Michael Brown from the UK, and thanks to the I'm Up Coffee Company. Use the promo code Dave Lewis, all one word, to get 15% off your first order. That's the I'm Up Coffee Company, imupcoffee.com. Your favorite cup of coffee hasn't been roasted yet. The executive producer is Hunter Lewis. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and iHeartRadio. Don't forget your 5-star review and positive comment. Certainly helps out a lot. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.